Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 2 of You Like Hoops? I'm your host, Chase Lucas. Just wanted to thank everyone who listened and gave some comments or nice words about the first episode. I thought it went pretty well. Like I said before, there will be a lot of things that will change and evolve, and quite honestly, really, I'd like to tailor a lot of these to each specific guest. So each episode probably will sound quite a bit different. I don't think I mentioned last time, if you have suggestions or questions or anything regarding the podcast, you can send me an email at deepfriedcouch1217@gmail.com. That's an email I kind of set up to handle the Grizzly Bear Blue stuff and now the podcast stuff. So anyway, just wanted to say again, thanks for listening. And like I said, there'll be some changes next week. Hopefully we'll have our first in studio with heavy air quotes around studio next week. And hopefully that'll be kind of a different experience. And so I'm excited to do that. But for this week, we are going to be joined by a guest from Grizzly Bear Blues. Once again, you may know him as a writer on Grizzly Bear Blues. You may know him from Twitter at The Real Herdlicka. He is a Twitter philanthropist and antagonist. He is a freak in the spreadsheets. He is coming to us from beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. He is Matt Herdlicka. How's it going, Matt?
Hey, Chase. First time, long time.
Well, we're glad to have you. How is Las Vegas?
It's good. I'm here for business. I've been to Vegas. You know this, but I've been to Vegas so many times, but probably, if I had to guess, I'd say probably 50, but
jeez.
I've only been here for pleasure twice, and let me tell you, it is drastically different.
Yeah, I was going to ask to get off topic before we even get on topic, but I know you go to Vegas a lot for business, and that was going to be a question, is do you like Vegas?
I love Vegas. I love Vegas. It is drastically different, but being here for business, it's like I can sort of schedule a little bit of pleasure to where I don't just burn myself out, you know? So coming here for business is actually like kind of a nice deal because you can kind of pace yourself, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I feel like that's a controversial question of do you like Vegas? Because I feel that people – I've been a bunch of times, I guess, I don't know, probably 6 or 7, and I haven't been – I guess this is probably the longest stretch I've gone without going since I turned 21. But I feel like a lot of people hate it, and I feel like my Vegas experience is probably different than the average person. But, yeah, I feel like if you pace yourself, it's a good time. But then I am a snob about many things, but vacations is not really one of them. I think you can kind of – find ways to enjoy yourself anywhere, but I enjoy Vegas personally.
Yeah, not to get too deep in the weeds here, but really Vegas, if you're going with people, it is so dependent on who you're going with. Like me and my buddies have actually crafted, like each of us have like crafted our like who would be our Vegas crew. It like you need like one wild card, but you also need a bunch of like really reliable people to like rein in the one wild card. You know what I mean?
So oh, that's definitely true.
If you go with too many people that are wild, you end up like I would end up being like the mom of the group whereas if you go with too many people like me, you end up not having any fun. So like you kind of have to make sure that the wild card is outnumbered.
Yeah. I've had both experiences, but yeah, the only one that was almost too much was we went with a bunch of people I know, but there were well, I guess I'm 30 now, so real adult is kind of applies to me too. But there were like some adults there with us, and they were mm-hmm. getting up at like 7 in the morning, 6 in the morning. But then there were also some of us who were like 25 at the time that were staying up till like 3 in the morning, and that was not a good recipe. But other than that, I always have a good time.
My rule of thumb anyway. Here is last thing. My rule of thumb is nobody should ever get up that early ever unless you're going to work. For Vegas, like so, those people are terrible.
No, I'm with you. All right, real quick, we can tie it into sports. Do you have a like when you think a glorious sports gambling moment? Is it like one that sticks out?
The singular one is, I bet I had the U.S. to advance in the World Cup to the, like, through the group. They didn't have to win, they just had to advance. And I got that at like 4.5 to 1. And so that was a really good sweat. That was the last World Cup, so they advanced, and I got paid out for it, 4.5 to 1. That one was pretty good. I don't have any insane, like, hey, man, I did. Because teasers, people come here, and, like, so many people love doing teasers. Teasers are the – I have a, like, a jihad against people doing teasers. Like, I try to talk everybody out of it because I'm just like, you're giving money away. They're such bad
guys. Yeah,
I
stay away from that as much as possible. I did. I think the very first time I went, I like spent way too much money that was just throwing money away, betting like Masters futures or something like 3 weeks before the Masters when we were there, which is like, I was like, Boo Weekly can do it at like 1,000 to 1 or whatever it was. It didn't pan
out.
So anyway, we'll start kind of where we'll start with pretty much all the guests, and that is just give me your origin story. In this case, you are a Grizzlies fan, so you can give us a little bit about how you got into the NBA and then specifically the Grizzlies, because much like our guests from last week, you have lived in Memphis but no longer live in Memphis. So just give us the story how you got into the Grizzlies.
I went to Rhodes. I'm from Louisiana originally. I don't know if you knew that or not, but I went to Rhodes, started there in 2000. And that like coincided with the Grizzlies being there. So my first year, I was playing football, and we were having – that was back when like the NCAA like allowed three-day like summer practices. So I was in the middle of 3 days, and just like I went from a class one high school. Like, you know, we had 55 in my graduating class. So it was like football, but it wasn't real football. And it, like – 3 days just hit me in the face, and I was like in over my head. And this was a summer where Memphis was setting heat records, so I was like, what the hell am I doing? You know, like, how is this possible? So anyway, I remember we had a practice at like, I think we started at 7 or 8 in the morning, and then we had like an hour and a half break, and then we were back out. So in like this hallway, and I look up, and this just really tall black dude walks past me, and I looked at him and I go, that's Shane Battier. And it was, because they were practicing all the Grizzlies. They were in the Pyramid at the time, but they didn't have a practice facility, so they were practicing at Rhodes, which I didn't know. And it was Shane walked by me. He was like, I think that was his rookie year even. And I was just like, holy shit, that's Shane Battier. And, like, I grew up in Baton Rouge, so I was a Saints fan, but that was, like, the closest professional team to Baton Rouge. So I never had a rooting – I'd always followed the NBA, but I never had a rooting interest, you know, in a team. So I sort of adopted the Grizzlies during college, and that's my origin story.
All right, and so then you were in Memphis until what year?
Oh, man. I think I left in 2010. No, sorry, 2011. I left in 2011.
Okay,
but,
so basically,
I mean, you know this. I'm still back quite a few times.
Right.
Like, I have business interests there, so.
But fair to say that, like,
yeah,
your Grizzlies fandom was cultivated during some pretty bad basketball then.
Yeah, I watched, they were actually pretty good.
Well, they had the no wins,
yeah,
but made the playoff runs.
Yeah, and I was watching, and so I was really poor coming out of college, and I had a ton of student loans, and I remember when I finally got my internet or a cable hooked up, like, watching basketball was cheaper than, like, going to get dinner or something, so I would just watch every single game, and I was like, this is great. I'm entertained. I'm not spending money. You know, because I had student loans hanging over me. So I just, you know, that was, I would say the year I got out of college was when I really got into it. And then, yeah, they had some lean years between then and now.
Cool. So I don't know if I mentioned before, but you probably know if you know Matt from Twitter, that also he writes at Grizzly Bear Blues. When did you start doing that? And I don't know if maybe you wrote somewhere beforehand, but when did you start writing about the Grizzlies, like, to put online?
I don't remember the year. But One of the first things I wrote was right around the time they traded for Kostas Koufos. I'd written some stuff, you know, so it was the year, it was the summer between when Lionel got fired and when they hired Dave Yeager. I had never written before, but I went to school to be, I was an English major and wrote, my major was literally creative writing. Like we had some literature classes, but most of them were writing classes. So I was, at one point I thought I was just going to write for a living. And that turned out not to be the case, but I do it just because I like writing and I enjoy it. And it, so Kevin Leip, DM'd me one day. He slid into my DMs and said, "Hey, it seems like you're really opinionated about this stuff and you're not an idiot. Do you want to write for us?" And I said, I was actually kind of reserved. I had a lot of questions for him. I was like, "I assume you're not paying me, you know, like, am I going to be obligated to write, you know, a word count? I don't really." And we worked it out to where he was very flexible, and Joe's been great. Everybody over there has been great, because my job is pretty demanding, but I tend to post in flurries of like two or three at a time. But that's how I got started. So whatever year that was, it was right around the time Lionel got fired.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm always interested because I was just like, I don't know. It's funny now because we're doing this podcast and I've written a little bit for the blog, but like, I just wasn't like in that part of the fan culture. Like I was super consumed with, you know, listening to the radio and reading, you know, mostly Commercial Appeal or Harrington at the Flyer, but like all of the blog stuff, my awareness of that, like, increased by 10 times, even just this past last summer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, I had no idea about any of it, but anyway, transitioning this middle section, for those who listened last week, you might have an idea. I want to kind of, like I said, tailor it to the guests, something that either they have some expertise in, or maybe that they're passionate about. Joe just happened to have had the, Chandler Parsons post that went up. And so we talked about, you know, some things surrounding that. And I never wanted to get, you know, too, granular about the time sensitive basketball stuff. Like that was a good example with what we talked about with Joe was some sort of issues that are tied to Chandler Parsons and not necessarily a breakdown of what's going on. Cause you can find that pretty much anywhere you turn around right now for sure. But with Matt, as people probably know, I think like NBA nerd, Twitter NBA nerd is something you wouldn't totally recoil at, but I think a lot of people think, that has to do with like advanced statistics is what they associate that term with. And like, certainly, and first of all, I hate every term that we've come up with to describe that. I usually just say non-crap statistics, but for lack of a better term, the advanced statistics stuff. But really, I think your nerddom, although you use that stuff when you write, I think your nerddom is more tied to the roster construction and how you put together a team under the cap, looking a year or two or more in advance of how a team is setting up. So with that in mind, I wanted to get your view on something that I've had a couple conversations with people on Twitter a couple times even about this current Grizzlies era. And I think what makes it unique is, depending on your definition, and by my definition, they've had an incredible run of success over the past 6 years or however many straight years it is they've made the playoffs. And usually, especially when you're talking small market, if you're talking about sustained success in a small market, what people will always say you have to have is stability and coherence from top down. And these years have been marked by almost the opposite of that for the Grizzlies. We've gone through one ownership change. We brought in a new front office under that owner, which then not only, you know, that relationship not only ended, but ended in extreme discord. And then eventually brought back the general manager from before that regime, but with some holdovers from it. And so anyway, I guess my question is, you know, when you look at it, where do you assign the most credit, or how much do you chalk up to luck what the Grizzlies have been able to do over the last 6 or 7 years?
That's a really interesting way to ask the question, because I think what it gets at is that it's just really hard to grade, you know, ownership, or if you want to blanket in as front office, you know, it's really hard to grade because you're talking about not that many data points in a very long stretch of time. Like, for instance, you know, everybody talks about like, oh man, this team drafts really well or this team drafts really poorly, but you only get one draft every year, and a lot of teams fire a lot of people in between then, and it's just really hard and kind of, I think, a flawed idea. There are some that draft really well, but sometimes you just like who's to say the Knicks didn't luck into Porzingis? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If they had picked third and Jahlil Okafor was on the board, would they have taken Okafor? You know, and where would that be? So with that said, you know, I think luck plays a big deal, you know, and it goes not just in terms of like, oh, we got a guy that, you know, we didn't think he was that good, but he really blossomed. Like, who would have ever thought Marc Gasol was going to be a future defensive player of the year when he was a rookie? Like, nobody really thought that. But some of the injury, some of it just comes down to injuries too. Like, that's a different type of luck. You know, Brandon Wright never hurts himself. He's probably really, really awesome. And fits in well. And so you have to sort of separate out that and say, you know, like, well, let me ask you this. Are you asking for the owner specifically, or are you kind of viewing it holistically as just like the whole front office, the organization as a whole?
I guess in some ways holistically. Eventually what I was sort of leading to is the question of, you know, how confident are you in what they've got set up there? And I think the answer you gave is kind of the answer I would have given, which is about the fact that no matter how much we like to talk about this stuff, and I fall into that category, like, the sample sizes are so small on things like draft picks and coaching hires and even free agent signings, especially if you're a team like the Grizzlies, who is only really trying to make 1 to 2 at max free agent impact signings a year. And so it is hard to tell. And I guess that was my question, or where we were eventually going to get to, is do you feel comfortable, or where would you rank if you were, I mean, not that you have to give me an exact number, but amongst the front offices in the NBA, how do you feel about what the Grizzlies have as they're, I won't say transitioning into a new era, but just moving forward?
I'm really comfortable. I think they have a good team. I was really nervous after the shakeup where Levian was ousted and Stu Lash was ousted, because I felt like they had sort of a perfect team, you know, or in the front office, I felt like they had a perfect team going. Levian had a lot of contacts and was doing, you know, and then Stu Lash was sort of the player development guy. And then they had John Hollinger doing analytics. Like, it, as far as a team structured a way that to an outsider looks like it makes sense, like, I was super confident. With the current regime, I'm a little less confident, but it's just because I think part of that is just that the roles are somewhat amorphous. Like, I think it's a little bit less transparent, like, who everybody stresses about. I wrote about this after last season. Everybody sort of stresses about, you know, clutter, like, you know, disorganization, too many voices in the room. I think a lot of that is just we don't know, so we assume that it's clutter. But if you look at the results, there have been some missteps. Certainly signing Chandler Parsons has not worked out so far. I think it was still a worthy gamble. Like, in terms of risk assessment and how you divvy up the money, I would definitely do that deal over again. Yeah, you know, like, not if you definitely knew Chandler Parsons was going to still be sort of, like, dragging his knee behind him. But, you know, like, sometimes if he doesn't re-injure that knee or whatever, like, no, the diagnosis from that point forward is not set in stone. It's really tough to play counterfactuals where you actually assess how likely something was to happen or not happen, because you have the thing that actually happened sitting directly in front of your face. The same thing with Vince. Like, Vince didn't produce for 2 straight years, and I still would have done that deal because it was a good risk. It was the best use of that. It would be hard pressed to find something better to do with that. So to answer your original question and circle back, like, I'm pretty confident. I wouldn't say they have the best organization, but I don't think that there are like alarm bells going off in any particular direction. The only move that I would kill them for over the last 5 years is the Jeff Green trade, and everybody knows where I stand on that, and, you know, whatever, but one out of messing up once out of 5 years is I think just about anybody would take that, you know?
Yeah, and I think that, I don't know, if I was like grading trades, you know, Jeff Green probably has to take that number one spot in terms of bad trades. But I mean, I think the Levian group, I'd probably put number two as the one where they, you know, kind of tied a pick to get off of money, you know, which I know their defense of it about they needed to do it because people weren't offering things for Rudy Gay and so on, but still to give a first round pick for that. But yeah, I think it's interesting because what you said with the free agent signings, and I think this kind of divides people ideologically, even like amongst hardcore fans. And we've done this argument before. I mean, I've seen it, but it kind of divides people along the lines of, I would say, and it's funny because I feel like I'm usually pretty critical of the Grizzlies, the team, the not the way the organization does on the business side, but at least like I tend to be more skeptical and critical in a lot of times. However, if you're looking at those three signings you mentioned with Wright, Carter, and Parsons, I still like the thought processes, and I'm still impressed that they pulled off each one of those individually, you know, without looking at what eventually has come of them. And yet, I think a lot of people would say, you know, at some point you have to have results and so on and so forth. But it leads to this weird thing for me, which I was thinking about this earlier in the season, that some of the most excited moments, and maybe this just speaks to the fact that I love like the player movement aspect and free agency, and I love all that stuff. So maybe that's all it is. But in a way, like some of the most exciting times I've had, probably even outside of playoff games, have been during the offseason when I thought the Grizzlies pulled off something really great, and then we never quite get to the payoff of it, which makes for a weird dynamic.
Yeah, so specifically with Wright, because I think Vince and Parsons are defensible, and Wright, I kind of separate them this way. Like, I think they knew that Wright was an awkward fit.
Yeah.
And also that he had health risk. Like, he's been injured before. This is not the first year and a half he's been injured. But the price tag was so ridiculously low that it was worth the gamble. And I think that that's the thing that people don't really realize, is that there's risk in every deal that you do. Even signing LeBron James, when Cleveland signed him, they signed him to a one-year deal, essentially. If things go south, and as drastic as this would be, like, and he would never do this, but it was still a one-year deal. And if they didn't make the playoffs, I mean, do you really think that LeBron, I mean, like, there's a chance LeBron walks after 1 year, you know, like that looks like a no-brainer, but it still could have not worked out. There's risk in everything. So I think it's important for organizations to just take a step back and really be self-reflective and look at what you're doing right. Look at what you're doing wrong. Look back at prior decisions and say, could we have done better? How did this work out? Are there through lines? And the one thing I would be critical of them is I just don't think that they assess injury risk well. It could just be a lot of bad luck. They could be doing everything right and just getting snake bit. But I think that them putting as much money as they say they're putting into player performance and, you know, all the health tracking data and all that stuff, shows that they realize that, I think at least on the outside looking in, that that's an area that they think they can improve in. And I would agree. I think that they definitely need to get a little bit more honed in on what the actual risk of a certain injury is.
Yeah, well, and I think you're right on that, because like we've both kind of admitted, and the funny thing is as fans, we like to discuss this stuff. There are plenty of media members who are paid to discuss it. And so you have to say something. So we try to analyze this largely unknowable stuff, but the complete overhaul of the, you know, medical or training staff and investing all this money, like you said, that almost, if you're reading between the lines, that's them saying, hey, we acknowledge, we think we had a problem, you know, going into this year. But that is, yeah. I guess, another large or big picture Grizzlies thing that I feel like you'll be more, usually you're more optimistic than I am when we have these conversations, but what, just kind of in terms of, and we'll get into another aspect of this in a minute, but what has this Grizzlies season felt like to you? To me, I don't know. It's lacked something in, I don't know what it is. I haven't felt as attached to it. Not like I just don't like the Grizzlies anymore type of deal. It's just, I don't know. I feel like what we always said about those Grizzlies teams, the really good ones, and some of these teams had been awesome, is that they were sort of in this category of maybe we were one injury, not that you ever wish that upon another team, but that you're maybe one injury to another team away from sneaking into the finals or getting to a West. And now this team feels to me more like you're like three or four in, like, you know, you would have to have several different teams have multiple injuries to be really assured you were going to like catch that break. And so it just feels a little different to me. And of course that affects how things, you know, what takes place going forward, but where are you at?
Well, let me turn it around on you. So let's just say, you know, I think everybody would acknowledge that the ceiling of this team is a little bit lower than prior, but certainly 2 years ago. They had such an awesome team 2 years ago. But let me ask you this. Do you think it has anything to – you personally has anything to do with Zach Randolph moving to the bench?
I don't know. I don't think so. Really, and like I said, we're going to get to some – another aspect of this that I think probably impacts me, but also I think it's a lot of things. One, I think the team has gotten for me a little boring analyze as compared to previous years. And that's not an on-court thing, because a lot of times they are, you know, exciting when as has been documented, the wins and losses fall pretty largely on, you know, what they do from the 3-point line. So it's not really, I'm not saying on court, but it's like, and I know people have this extreme Chandler Parsons fatigue, and part of it for me comes from that's the only thing to look at, because his contract isn't going anywhere and he's not going anywhere, and there's no way to know. I mean, I think we can safely put it in the less likely that it's probably not likely he's going to return to form this season, but like we don't know about next season, and so it's just kind of like what. There's not going to be space this summer. The decisions are kind of who are you going to invest in going forward. And so, I mean, I guess the Jermichael conversation versus Zebo and TA is interesting, but it's just kind of like when it all comes down to it, if this team can be good enough to be worth continuing to just like pursue everyone possible, it's just like, is Chandler Parsons ever going to be more than what he is right now? And I've got no way to know that. And so it just has taken a lot of the intrigue out of it for me, maybe, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, I mean, I sort of don't have a good answer for you, but I would say I'm less intrigued, and I don't know how to parse out, like, why exactly, because certainly part of it is just, like, they're not as good as, or maybe it's just that they're less likely, probably the better way to say it is they're less likely to win a title this year than they were 2 years ago. I mean, I was at the Portland game 3 where Conley broke his face in Portland, and like that team was humming. They were so much better than Portland. Portland had no chance, and it was just like soap. We got our shots whenever we wanted. We got to the rim whenever we wanted. We got our mid range. I mean, it was just like we couldn't hit a 3-pointer, and it didn't matter, which was kind of like spectacular. I wonder if some of it is just like the team is different, and like we sort of are at the tail end of quote unquote grit and grind. And I wonder if some of it is just like the team is different and in a way that isn't as resonant. Like people sort of have to admit at this point, like, you know, like for me personally, it looks like Tony and Zach can't bring it every night. Like they have great games still. They're still very good players, but, you know, I feel like the team's success certainly doesn't hinge on them anymore, and also they can't be counted for, so far through the regular season, cannot be counted to bring it every single night. Like, I just don't know if it's physically possible. And maybe some of it is just, like, trading that in for Chandler Parsons, who was supposed to be the savior and is dragging his leg behind him. You know, like, it's... Maybe that's part of it. It's just kind of like a damn it, you know, like, and as far as interesting, yeah, I sort of watch every game and I'm like, okay, here's Chandler. Let's see if he's still pretty slow. And I don't mean to bag on him at all. Like, he can't help the fact that he's not healthy and, you know, all that. And I'm not criticizing the move because I still would have done it. But like we were talking about that last summer when we met up, I thought they were going to go out and get Kent Bazemore. Is this team drastically better if they have Kent Bazemore at $17 million than Chandler at 22 or whatever? Like, you know, at least with Chandler Parsons in the fold, you have upside there. You have a player with the skill set that you need. I think also for me personally, now that I'm thinking about it, one of the things that's been less interesting for me is just like they're not playing the young players anymore. So I don't have like the shiny thing to like, ooh, let's see what this, like the discovery of what these players could be. Like, I'm really disappointed we haven't seen Wade Baldwin. And, you know, it just kind of sucks that you don't have the carrot in front of you there, you know, because I'd really like to see what he could do. And he clearly isn't up to par.
Yeah, and we're getting to a point where, I don't know, it's hard because I agree with you. And at the same time, like, and I know that you feel the same way because I've heard you say it. But, I mean, I get every reason that Wade Baldwin is not getting minutes and spending most of the time in the D League. Like, that is, it's not a mystery to me. I get why Fizz would do it. And yet at the same point, all the reasons to not play those guys are getting increasingly to be like reasons you wouldn't play Chandler Parsons. And that's because you just can't do it and win at the same time. And so it is frustrating because it's just getting repetitive and it's the same thing over and over again. And like I said, I will make every Chandler Parsons joke pretty much outside of blaming him for his health, which he can't control. And yet the most exciting, I don't think I've had a Grizzlies moment. I guess one of those comebacks maybe, but that's been more exciting than, I mean, I remember being in the car on the way to Pickwick on that, you know, 4th of July weekend and seeing the Woj tweet that Chandler Parsons depicted the Grizzlies. And like, I was so excited. Because, I mean, and for all the reasons that have just been said, and it's just like we're in this loop where you say, yeah, like it was a gamble you had to take. He would have unlocked so many things. He was the perfect fit, and all that's true every time. And then you watch him, and he's just not at the level of an NBA player. And so then you say that every time, and it does just kind of keep going round and round and round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all that.
Yeah, and so I think the other thing too maybe is that between the fact that Parsons is locked up and the fact you don't have picks, like there's no other road to go down. Like there's not, like we argue about like Tony Douglas, which I mean, like I have opinions on Tony Douglas, but like that's the most interesting argument we can have because it's like the only thing that can change.
Yeah, people aside keep complaining about Tony Douglas, and I'm like, it's for me personally. And this may go in a direction you don't want to take it, but for me personally, the reason that I kind of like, I just sort of like recoil against the insistence that he is actually the solution, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm not presenting alternatives. I'm not saying he's worse than like, oh, Andrew Harrison or Wade Baldwin should play over him. I'm not even making that. I'm just kind of recoiling against sort of like the line that some media is floating out there that, oh no, you know, he's the veteran, like he's exactly what they need. I'm like, come on, like, you know, I'm not dumb.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean,
anybody that has said that is listening now, they're probably like pissed, but you know, like I'm not going to be sold to.
Yeah. I'm with you. And I don't know. There's a weird thing this year where I don't know how to gauge because so many media members' roles have changed in terms of people that I listen to locally and trust in terms of information that I don't want to sit here and ascribe like, I mean, I did like a Grind City story. I'm not trying to say they've just like locked it up beyond what it was before. I think maybe it's a little tighter, but I think at the same time, like just people's roles in the media and the city have changed. And so to a degree, I think because there are fewer voices that are you're hearing from the Grizzlies, and maybe this is me personally, because quite honestly, like I don't really listen to talk radio ever, and I used to, so this is probably a personal thing, but I think I'm hearing and seeing those company line type things, like the record with him in there, and the stuff, you know, like the Grizzlies are the only team to beat Cleveland and Golden State, or, you know, all that kind of stuff, just like, it's louder than everything else, but I mean, I'm with you on him, and I think it's just, Like, I think you probably win more with him in there than Andrew Harrison, but then I'm really low on Andrew Harrison. But it's just, I think people just, like, want to change. Like, every name you see drop on the buyout, it's like,
yeah, I know.
Let's get him. And it's just because it would be something interesting. Like, I've been more interesting to watch Brandon Jennings run around out there than, you know, this kind of thing that keeps going on. And maybe we're coming to a breaking point with Parsons. I don't know. And then that'll be a change for people to analyze. But it just does feel like a different year to me. And we'll go into – I said we were going to get into another part of it. And I think this honestly, to answer my own question before I ask it, I think this is a big part of it for me. And that is, you know, you've been – and let me just say, I feel like I do this too much where, like, I try to cut people off at the pass of a criticism I already can hear coming. But, like, we're going to talk about all kinds of random stuff on this podcast. And so if that's not your thing, like, it's okay that it's not your thing. And if it makes you mad, like, how – anyone, me or a guest feels about a specific topic, that's okay too. Like, I don't necessarily need to hear about it, especially on this topic. But I mean, you were vocal, and like that's the other thing is you can, if you follow either of us on social media, you're going to know how we feel about what we're about to talk about. And that's essentially what has gone on since election night up until now. And I'm not going like all into a full political discussion. I'm tying it back to sports, I promise. But I mean, I know you tweeted something to the effect of you were taking it, I think around probably on the day of the inauguration, you said, you know, you were taking it harder than you thought. I had to take like a full on break pretty much after election night. And I can tie it back to the Grizzlies because I was at the game on election night because I read some story, either Wall Street Journal or New York Times, about how like that was going to be the lowest ticket price night in however many years. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to be stressed out if I'm watching the election or not. I'm going to go sit like two rows behind the Grizzlies bench for very cheap. And so I was sitting there watching that as kind of, you hear the murmurs around the crowd of what's going on. But like, I mean, after the election, I took like a month break where I just couldn't handle Twitter and all the lovely stuff it brings. But, and honestly, you know, a lot of the stuff that's been the most emotional or traumatizing for people has been stuff that's happened, you know, between the inauguration and now more so between the election and the inauguration. But has it changed the way you experience sports? And you can get as specific as the Grizzlies or as broad. And really, we could have this conversation about, you know, other forms of entertainment, be it film, TV, literature. But has it changed the way you're processing stuff like that? Because I think maybe that is one of the reasons I just feel like somewhat disconnected from this Grizzly season more than others. And I'm trying to ascribe these like logical basketball things to it. And maybe it's none of that.
You know, actually, I think, so I'm going to change my answer to the previous thing. Cause I mean, the election really affected me like very strongly, in an emotional, way. I mean, you know, if somebody disagrees with me politically, that's totally fine. I'm not trying to, you know, change minds here. But I do think it's important to answer your question, yes. I think it has affected, like, everything seems so trite. You know, it just, like, the outcome of a specific basketball game, you know. The weird thing is I never really lived and died on regular season games. Like, I would care about some, but really the outcome of most of the seasons of the last, you know, 5-6 years has been, we knew they were going to be a playoff team and they had, it was just what kind of run they were going to make. So maybe things will change in the playoffs, but just like everything seems so, you know, like just trite and not pointless, but just like, it doesn't matter, you know, because so many really big things are happening. You know, I think it's important, though, to sort of like, and I've talked about this with friends, like I've made them talk about it with me, just in the sense of like, I'm not trying to change. I'm from Louisiana and I have a lot of friends in Memphis. Like, we both have a ton of conservative friends. And I want to let them know, like, you know, like when you're hooting and hollering and joyous over, you know, the election outcome, I think it's important to let them know not everybody agrees with you. Not to say like, I know better than you, but just that, you know, this affected disagrees and wants to dismantle almost everything I care about.
Hey, you cut out for a few seconds there. I don't want people to think I like chopped out something you said on the podcast. So just start back like a few seconds.
Okay.
You're saying.
Yeah. So I think it's important I think it's important to that everybody knows that how you feel, not in the sense that I'm asserting that I'm right, but just in the sense that not everybody agrees with their outcome. Like we've gotten to a point where it's two sides trying to win an argument, which is not really the way that citizens should talk to each other about politics. That should be left to the government and to the two sides. And when I'm talking, so for instance, let me just use the term or Obamacare. Everybody has really strong opinions about Obamacare, and I certainly don't want to change anybody's mind about it. But I've got two friends at home. One of them is very strongly opposed to it. He runs a company, and it has affected their premiums. It costs them a lot of money, and he hates it. And I say, I understand where you're coming from. I've got a friend whose daughter racks up $200,000 in hospital bills because she has an incurable disease. And if Obamacare is repealed, that girl's either going to die or the family's going to be bankrupt. So it's like, you know, I feel like if those two people met and they had a conversation, one would be trying to convince the one with the daughter would have to hear from the other one that here are the reasons why you're wrong, you know, and like would be trying to convince them of an argument. And it's like you have to realize that, you know, these type of big problems are very big and are bigger than just your own space. You know, if you're affected adversely, I understand that. I'm not trying to change your mind. But if you're not, or if, you know, something is working for you or whatever, just know that something might be working for somebody else and their reality is just as important as yours. So I don't know. That was a really long diatribe, but I feel like it's important to be to let people know that, you know, these things matter to, you know, like the environment really matters to me. And, you know, you see things about the EPA being dismantled and, you know, like, the Congress submitted a law that the EPA could be dismantled. That concerns me in a way that, like, you know, my kid's future might be, you know, jeopardized. But I don't think people really, you know, like, some of my conservative friends applaud that. So, you know, I don't know. I'm sort of rambling. What do you think?
No, it's definitely – I mean, affected the way it's really weird because I was thinking about this at the Oscars last night. It's affected the way I process all of this stuff. I think it's probably the reason I'm somewhat numb on the Grizzly season. I found myself with a lot of these movies that people were talking about, gut punches, that I just like didn't really emotionally resonate with me. I mean, Moonlight definitely did, but like Arrival and Manchester by the Sea, like, I just sat there and watched Manchester by the Sea and I thought, okay, yep, that's a sad movie. And I think it's just like a general numbness because I'm just like, I can't separate what's going on, you know, in the actual world from the stuff normally I just sort of enjoy. And I mean, with sports even, I mean, it was one of the most bizarre things among many with all of this was watching the Falcons and the Patriots. I don't care much about NFL football at all, but watching that become a political thing where one side was on one, it was on the Falcons. And if you were conservative, you were with the Patriots. And, like, I mean, I saw people who literally felt that way. And I saw people who I know, you know, tweeting about, like, basically, like, it was a victory for Trump and telling people maybe they should go protest the Patriots' victory. And I was like, that is just, like, it's infected everything. And I don't know. And from what you were talking about, the thing I struggle with, and this is why I just had to shut it off for a while, it's yelling about how we do this in terms of if you're trying, and like you said, I've got a lot of friends who are conservatives. I have a lot of friends who not only probably voted for Trump, I know they did. And on one hand, I think it's more valuable that I continue to be friends with those people. And I don't let them, I mean, I make them have conversations with me, like you said, and it happens regularly. On the other hand, I know a lot of people are hearing this and I see the argument that would say, you know, like the time for that's over. It's an all out, I don't want to use the word war, but, you know, it's all out the other direction. There's no time for making nice and all this kind of stuff. And on one hand, I think I just can't be that way. For one, I don't think it's strategic. I mean, if you're just even thinking about it in a cold sense and you are looking for this not to happen in the future and for this, in my opinion, nightmare not to last for any longer than it has to, then there's a strategy in trying to change a mind, or not even trying to change a mind, but if somebody just hears you and one of the things you say sinks in and makes them consider something. On the other hand, we're both white dudes, and so from that perspective, like, the things that are the most traumatic for people, there's a lot of the things that do matter to us personally, but a lot of it's things we're empathizing with rather than we actually are forced to experience. And so I also can't tell anyone, like, oh, hey, no, you can't tell everyone, just F off and be done with it, because I can't tell that person how to feel, because they're experiencing all of this in such a more personal and deeper way than I can. But again, to tie it all back in, I think it definitely probably has something to do with it. There's so many factors why I think I've been dull or somewhat bored by this season. I also was, like, out of town, and not only out of town, but pretty much out of the loop during a couple of the huge comebacks. And so, like, if you miss the Warriors game where we crushed the Warriors and you miss the Warriors comeback, it's a different feeling season. I don't know. But on all that, yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not the most qualified person to talk about it. And that's why I kind of wanted to tie it into talking about the way it affects how you process things. And regardless of how you feel about the way that it went, it's, you know, humongous things are happening in the world. And, you know, the whole thing, I'm not the first to say, but there's a lot of times you just turn on the TV or look at Twitter and you're like, I'm living in something that's going to be in a history book or history iPad or hologram or whatever the people are using to process their education, assuming that education still exists. And so it's a bizarre thing. And I think it's hard I have not been successful using sports as a distraction, which is, I know, what a lot of people want it to be. And I kind of get that in some degree, but I can't do it.
Yeah. I think there's a couple good things, you know, just that it's engaged a lot of people. People have the government is set up in a way where drastic things are not supposed to happen. You know, mm-hmm. We've got checks and balances. We've got the Senate. So every state has equal ownership and of the decision-making process. It's supposed to be messy. And this is the one time where, like, something drastic has happened. And I think it sort of has rocked people. I think we just didn't think this could happen, that an outsider could win like this. You know, and I think one of the things that I've been trying not to do is during the run-up, it seemed so unrealistic that this man could win, and he was so, like, clearly unqualified that I just assumed everybody would realize that. And I sort of, I thought that, like, you know, people would sort of see that and look at it, you know, and so, like, I mocked people that were going to vote, that were, like, strong Trump supporters, and I sort of put them on the fringe. And what that does is it, like, reinforces a bubble. And, you know, I've always been sort of – anything that happens in life, I sort of – like, if something negative happens, I run a business. So if, like, we lose a job or something, I'll look at it and say, what could I have done better? And even if the outcome is just, like, oh, we got unlucky or whatever, I still will try to find one thing that I could do better. And I think it's important to realize for everybody – and this is to tie it back – so what I was saying before is everybody has ownership of this president, whether you voted for him or not. We're all Americans, and this is all of our country. And, you know, I think everybody has to own the fact that the next 4 years is on all of us, regardless of what happens. And, you know, he could do a great job. It hasn't happened that way so far, but he could turn it around, you know, whatever. I'm not closing down that possibility, but anyway, and one other thing I wanted to mention to tie it loosely back into sports, I've had a really hard time writing because a long time ago I heard the phrase clear thinking begets clear writing. And for me, that's really true, is I need to be able to clear headspace and just focus on something for a really long time. And that's been really hard. Just writing about the Grizzlies I've had to apologize to Joe a couple times and say, look, man, I haven't been able to, you know, find time. Some of it is just like, you know, I'll try to clear headspace and just won't be able to. Haven't been reading as much. But, you know, we've done some other stuff too. I've reached out to a lot of people that I haven't talked to in years. I don't have very many Black friends, but I have some. And so I texted them and I was like, hey, you know, how you doing? And some of them were like, I'm terrified. And I'd say, okay, if there's anything I can ever do for you, let me know immediately and I'll be there for you. You may not get another text like this. You may get 20, but I'm one of the 20, you know?
That
I feel like that's a thing that people should do more often, because I literally haven't talked to those dudes. A couple of them were people, guys I played football with, you know, old high school friend, whatever. But, you know, relationships take time and they take effort, and, you know, maybe putting some effort back into some of those and just letting people know that you're here for them is important.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never forget that, unfortunately, like Marc Gasol tipping in a game-winning buzzer beater that night and finding out that was the game on election night. And yeah. I'll never forget going home after. And I just, like, I remember somebody asked, like, are you going to watch, like, it play out, basically? Because at that point we knew what was going to happen. And are you going to watch the speeches? And I said, no, I'm going home, going to bed. And I couldn't. And I remember watching all of it, and I remember having multiple interactions with people on Twitter, in DMs, and I think publicly, and people, you know, from real life that just were like, I wasn't either, but who just said, I'm not okay. And it was this really weird thing, because I'm always kind of bouncing back and forth. Is Twitter like an even a positive influence in my life or not? And it feels way more, you know, to one direction or the other, depending on the day. But I was just like this weird thing where, like, you just see this funnel of hatred at the same time as, like, a way that people are connecting right now, maybe because we're the only people that, you know, that we know that are still awake. But it was a bizarre thing. And, you know, I can't make any better sense of it than anyone else. But like you said, it's definitely impacted. And to be totally honest, you know, that election, I didn't write, and I haven't written for the site. And in a lot of ways, that's what got this podcast going, was, and I should have been more upfront with Joe, but I started looking at it, and it was after the election, and I was in a funk, and there's, like, you know, personal stuff that's, you know, tangentially tied to the election stuff, but not really, that I definitely am not going to get into right now. But I just told him after a while, when he asked, he said, you know, it's been a while since you've written. And I said, I don't really like it that much. I like writing, but I do not enjoy, like, right now I don't have the motivation to care enough, the amount that I should, to, like, parse out exactly what's going right or what's going wrong with the Grizzlies. And he said, you know, I know that we talked about the podcast in the past. And I was like, yeah, that actually is exactly the type of thing that I would like to do, because I would like to get to know people through that and just have some conversations with people and let them kind of say what they feel about stuff. And that's kind of how we ended up doing this, was because I just, you know, we had a conversation about the fact I did not have the motivation to do the writing stuff, because I just didn't feel like, unlike previous seasons, I didn't feel like I cared enough or was tuned in enough to the Grizzlies to be, like, writing about it in good conscience. But anyway, after that lovely and heavy conversation, we will get back to hoops, and hopefully people are excited about that too. So anyway, we're going to do the still unnamed sort of rapid fire section of the podcast. We're going to go through some questions. Sometimes they'll be the same depending on the guests. Sometimes they'll switch up a little bit, but we'll start off. Favorite basketball player of all time?
It used to be John Stockton. But revisionist history is Hakeem Olajuwon.
Okay. All right. Least favorite basketball player of all time?
Reggie Evans.
Yeah, I thought we'd get some Reggie Evans. favorite basketball media person? It can be a writer. It could be a TV personality, like an analyst, podcaster, anything.
I saw this one. I don't know where to take it, because there's so many good people out there. like you, I really like Kevin Arnovitz, because he approaches things a little bit differently. And when he goes on Zach Lowe's podcast, that's just like appointment listening.
Yep.
Like I have to listen to it immediately. And Zach is like sneaky, where you never know when he's going to drop in like a, you know, I had somebody tell me, and then he'll say something like out of the blue from an unnamed person he talked
mm-hmm.
to like in a bar. And it's like, whoa, I need like sometimes I'll tune out like what's going on, 'cause I'm involved in work or whatever. And he'll be halfway through a story about something he heard, and I'll be like, whoa, when did this start? And I'll have to, you know, hit the 15-second rewind a couple times. I would say if there were three people that I had to have, it would be Kevin Arnovitz, Zach Lowe, and Network. Because you gotta mix the high and the low. If I don't have Network in my life, like, if you want to talk about Twitter distraction, that man is still as funny as he was before, and as necessary to me getting a laugh out of something ridiculous as pre-election time. So I think those would be my top three. The other two I really like are Danny LaRue, and because he thinks about things in such a nerdy way that is like just totally different than a lot of the basketball lifers. His Real GM podcast is really good, so shouts to that. And then I like Coach Thorpe a lot too, because he's sort of like the opposite. He's just straight coach all the time and straight hoops.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't really get into the numbers in terms of you know, salary and draft picks and all that stuff. Like, he's just straight, what are the skills and how does team work?
Yeah, and I'll break in and say, if you happen, this would be a really weird podcast for you to be listening to if you're like a new to basketball fan, but if by chance we have somebody like that, not surprising, but Matt just gave like an incredible buffet of writers that you kind of, I mean, you explained how they're different, but that is like one of the best groups of giving you something a little bit different from each one that I can think of. Those are all really good. That's what
Thorpe,
I like.
Thorpe doesn't work as much as he used to. I don't hear him as much, but he's really good. I also like Haralabob. I have to say, I'm a Haralabob truther. Like, I love everything he says.
Thorpe does, I think it's every Thursday. They've only started it kind of recently, but him and Henry Abbott do a podcast every Thursday on the True Hoop podcast.
Yeah, it's the True Hoop one. I'm not subscribed to that one, so I only see it if it pops up on my timeline. I need to see.
Yeah, they got a lot of ones that go into one feed, but you know, you can kind of take what you like and delete what you don't. But yeah, that's what I love. Another advice that comes out of what you just said, for if you're like a relatively new fan or something, is absolutely, and this applies to people locally, and I know Harrington, I think he does Calkins's show on in the mornings, but guys like him and national guys, anytime they're talking, because they're different mediums, and especially for a little bit of old school guys, they think of, I think, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but they think of print or online writing as different from radio or podcasts, and so they will absolutely slip in little things that you could miss if you're not paying attention, but you can pick up on good information that way for sure.
Yeah, and just, I think it's important to have a bunch of different types of information coming into you, like, and this applies to everything, obviously, you know, political, like, I follow a lot of conservative people on Twitter just because I like to hear the other side of things, but tie back into Grizzlies, like the podcast that Harrington, Hawkins, and Ron Tillery do together.
It's a really good mix.
Like, for whatever reason, I love that podcast. Like, it's just like the perfect blend of personalities and perspectives. And I definitely do not agree with everything they say, but they just kind of have a rapport. I've told Harrington this, like, I love that the just them batting around the ball, you know?
Oh yeah, I get disappointed when that podcast pops up and I realize that one of them wasn't able to make it, because you're right, they're coming at it from such different places that it's, you know, and I think that there's a comfort level there where they're willing to push back on each other a little bit, you know, if
yeah.
they disagree, and that's a good one.
Disagreements are okay. Like, people have to realize that, like, disagreements are okay. You're not going to win an argument all the time. Like, if you think differently than another person, you can still coexist. It's totally fine.
Yeah, I think that's a big especially like when you get into a really specific like subculture on Twitter, like Grizzlies Twitter, let's take for example, I think that's a big issue because sometimes people, and I don't know how you fix this really, but sometimes people will be in arguments. And if you don't know that those two people know each other a little bit, it looks like they freaking hate each other. And it's a weird thing because sometimes I'll see people that think that like two people are really going at it. And I'm like, nah, those two know each other. They probably are like texting and laughing about it, like off of Twitter. But
for an entire year, me and Ben Brown disagreed with literally every Grizzlies take we had.
I remember.
He would just disagree with everything. And it was just like, we like each other. Like, what's going on? We need to like mix things up. Like, I need to mix in a take that I know you'll like just to see if you'll disagree with it. But I don't know. It's me and Ben are on good terms now. We've done a lot of conversating about it. So we're good.
All right. Favorite basketball movie?
I'm going to throw a curveball at you. It's not a movie. It is the West Wing episode in season one where the West Wing crew are playing a pickup basketball game and impromptu. First of all, the jump shots are incredibly white. The dribbling is even more incredibly white. And one of the players picks up the ball. The president picks up the ball, stops the game. And there's a soliloquy halfway through where one of them is talking about his better angels. And it's just like the most ridiculous basketball thing. And then to cap it all off, the president brings in a ringer, and the ringer is Juwan Howard. And Juwan Howard dunks, and that ends the game. It's the greatest 2-minute appropriation of basketball for a scene in TV history.
And this drives several people crazy, particularly my sister, is because I love nothing more than trying to figure out – not trying because it's always easy, but figuring out when a basketball scene happens in a movie or a television show is figuring out – who, if any of the people, can actually play basketball whatsoever. It's so fun.
Who can dribble with their left hand.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, I'm getting a little off topic.
You know what? Wait. Close second?
Yeah.
Close second is Chappelle's Show with the Charlie Murphy Prince skit. Is one of the seminal comedy moments of my lifetime.
That is one of those things that I know of because people reference it all the time and have never seen.
Stop. We need to can we call it up and do a blow by blow right now? No, I'm just joking. You know, my wife had never seen it and I made her watch it. This was like a couple months ago. She had never seen it and I made her watch it and she was like, this is hilarious. Like, let's watch it. I think we watched it twice in a row.
What quickly on the West Wing. Okay, so I'm not sure of how many seasons I've seen. Is there a point where it gets bad?
Yes.
And when is it?
It is. So everything, I don't remember how many seasons there are, but the last season is awful.
Okay.
So for me, The West Wing is a show about writing and tangentially about government. And the heart of the show is the Rob Lowe character. And when he leaves, it hangs on because there's a couple plots they have to get through. But basically, once he leaves the show, that's sort of like the death knell of it.
Okay.
The last season, you don't need to watch it at all.
That's
Jimmy
my
Smith
question.
Is prominently involved. Yeah, you don't need to watch it.
Yeah, because I've seen a bunch of it, and I loved it. It's probably been 4 or 5 years since I started it. And I loved it. And then I knew from just listening to like TV podcasts and stuff that there was some point where people said it gets bad and I was afraid I was getting too close and there's just too much TV to waste a season of TV on something crappy. But that's good to know. I'll log that away. What do we have next? How close is your Twitter persona to your actual personality?
I'd say it's pretty close because I don't really filter anything. I make bad jokes. I make some good jokes. I only like loosely know stuff about basketball. The thing is, I don't try to be right all the time. And if you go back and look, like, I'm sure I've said dumb stuff because I say dumb stuff to my wife all the time. You know, like it's just me. So I'd say it's pretty close. Like I don't try to filter stuff. I don't know, how close is yours to you?
Yeah.
Would you say?
See, I think it's close, but then the more I think about it, I think I might be nicer in real life because people tell me I'm grumpy on Twitter, and I mean I can be grumpy, But I don't think I'm that. That's what somebody said after the first episode. They were like, yeah, you weren't really very grumpy like you are on here. And I was like, well, I didn't know. So maybe I'm like slightly nicer in real life. I don't know.
So here's how little I front on Twitter. So I was trying to explain to my wife what slide into the DMs means. And like, she did not get it. Like, she still doesn't understand. So she was like, have you ever slid into DMs before? And I was like, no, I'm married. And she goes, well, have you ever DM'd a girl before? And I was like, well, yeah. And she goes, well, who was it? And she got like, kind of like, you know, and I showed her, I went through all of my I handed my wife my phone and let her go through every single DM I've ever sent. And there were a couple to girls, and they were totally like, you know, one was like, hey, if you need anything, let me know. It was a lot of that. It was like, hey, I didn't want to send this publicly, but if you need anything, you know, I don't know what I can do, but, you know, you let me know. Another one who will remain nameless, I was trying to hire. So it was like stuff like that, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know. I tend to think it's close. There's stuff I leave out, but the only things I think I really leave out is there are a few specific things that I am someone who actually thinks you can have constructive back and forth disagreements on Twitter. And I think you can even alter people's perspectives if they're willing to listen to it. Cause I think that's happened to me on some things, but there are a few things places I will not go on Twitter. But other than that, I think maybe a tad nicer.
I see. I disagree. We've had that conversation before.
Yeah, we have.
I kind of disagree with that assessment. Like, I just don't think it's the best place to have a conversation. So with the caveat of, I think there's some people who are open to having the conversation and you can change, but I don't think that you would catch people change minds that would otherwise not be open to a differing opinion, if that makes sense. So
yeah, I'll agree with that.
I
think maybe if I were to put a caveat, I think if I could explain it more clearly than I have, maybe when we've talked about it, I think if someone is open-minded and maybe already slightly leaning a direction, I think you can really help that person along. And that's somewhat speaking from experience, because a lot of stuff, whether it's political or just intellectual, I appreciate that there are a lot of people who probably grew up in environments where all that stuff was sort of hardwired into them. There's a lot of issues for me where that's not the case. And so I had sort of a feeling or a contrarian opinion to what my environment was, but I didn't understand it fully. And I think that I've been helped by people, not necessarily back and forth, maybe that's the case, but just reading, you know, people who are smart on a subject that I don't understand very well. I think, you know, my understanding on certain things has definitely been helped up by that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let's see. Did you play basketball at any level, even pick up, or it could be higher level than that? And if so, what is your greatest personal basketball moment or achievement from your quote unquote playing career?
I played pickup. I did not play. My best friend was trying to get me to play in high school my senior year, and I was playing football and baseball, and I just didn't want to. Side note, had I played, I would have gotten dunked on by Marcus Spears, who turned out to be a defensive end for the Dallas Cowboys for like a decade, because he was like, he played for our school's big rival, and I would have played power forward. Me, like, you've met me before. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I would have gotten destroyed. And what would make that equally hilarious is that Marcus Spears destroyed me in football. Like, he played, they had him playing middle linebacker, and this was on a punt. He laid me out on a punt return. I was returning a punt. He just absolutely floored me. Greatest achievement would be one night me and my buddy in college were hanging around doing something, and one of my friends offhandedly said he could beat me 1-on-1. And I looked at him and I said, you will never be able to beat me in 1-on-1 ever. We can go right now and I will beat you. And I said, you can pick the terms however you want. I'm going to beat you. And So in the least athletic bout of one-on-one basketball ever, we played like best 2 out of 3 games of 11, and it was just like a war of attrition. But I did win, and to this day it is still like, if he gets up too high on his high horse, I'll just be like, I beat your ass in one-on-one basketball and you can never tell me that I didn't, or something like that, you know, and it'll just like kind of end the conversation there. But yeah, that'd probably be, so to bring it back, like I did not play in college or high school or anything like that. So my knowledge is strictly like viewing knowledge.
No, I prefer a good pickup story or something like that. I hope we get a bunch of those, or like mine was from middle school. Speaking of, you know, playing against, which I did not play against, but watching professional athletes in high school, is when we went to the state championship, and I was not on the team, but my high school team, the state championship game, our team had Greg Hardy and Michael Orr, and the other team had Brandon Wright.
Oh my God.
And that was, it was really crazy.
Oh yeah, you went to Briarcrest. I remember that now.
Yeah, I hated almost every moment there. So don't hold it against me. whatever you think of it, I think less of it. Anyway.
I don't think anything. I'm agnostic on Briarcrest. I don't care. So.
Okay, well, you can ask for some stories sometime. I'll give them to you. But anyway, no one out there asked me for stories. That invitation was only for Matt. But they,
I'll slide into your DMs later.
Absolutely. And then, you know, your wife is welcome to read them. But they, we learned that day that while two NFL players or future NFL players can be really good at basketball, they are not any match for a future NBA player at basketball. It was insane watching Brandon Wright. The thing I remember actually was he just made free throw after free throw after free throw, which is funny because he's not like the world's best free throw shooter or anything now. Let's see. Last one. What is the non-sports thing you consider yourself the biggest fan of? Like I said before, for purpose of this conversation, something you engage with beyond the thing itself, you know, in some sort of fan culture way, or just reading material about it that is not that thing specifically.
So something about my personality, I don't like engage with things like on a passive. So I get really into, if I'm into something, I get really into it. So I read a lot about but in the last like 7 years or so, politics and getting people engaged and just like, you know, doing good and voting and stuff like that. But I would say the number one thing that my number one passion outside of sports would be just reading and books in general, writing. I read literary criticism. I read just about anything I can get my hands on, but the problem is I'm a really slow reader. I put books down a lot. I underline in them. I'll go back and reread them. It just is a really sort of like, as many books as I've read, I can't, some people, pretty much everybody reads faster than I do. So that part's frustrating because there's so many good books. But just, and just sometimes, the thing is, sometimes somebody will write something and it will just be so perfectly written that it will just like irritate the shit out of me, because it's just like at one point in my life, I wanted to be a writer, you know, and it's just like you sort of realize that that person is LeBron James and you'll never be LeBron James. Like just the inherent talent of like a phrase that is different than anything you've ever read before the answer would be books. I used to be really into TV and movies, not as much. You're really into movies. I don't get into movies as much. I used to really be into TV. Close second would be like The Challenge on MTV's The Challenge. That's my other.
We can just erase this and do a challenge pod.
We should. The greatest, as the Ringer, as Bill Simmons would say, the America's Fifth, you know, national pastime. But you did say technically this had to be non-sports, and I consider The Challenge a sport. Yeah, so
I wouldn't have wanted to insult The Challenge in that way. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. The book that, in fact, I asked you and a bunch of other people for recommendations a couple of years ago, because that was definitely not something I grew up reading a ton, some but not a ton. And you definitely, though, probably, I mean, again, my library or backlog of what I've read is not anywhere approaching yours. However, you did recommend what I would probably say is my favorite book in A Visit from the Goon Squad. So check that out.
Oh, my God. That's so, yeah, I would recommend that too. I'm trying to get my wife. I'm so proud of my wife. She joined a book club, and she thinks that, like, I laugh telling me stories about it, and she thinks that, like, I'm mocking her, but it's kind of like a giggle of just like pride. And it's like she never read and never enjoyed it, and it's just like happiness that makes me sort of like giggle like a little schoolgirl. And she's like, stop making fun of me about, you know, like them reading like a rom-com book or some, whatever they're reading. I don't know. I have no idea what they're reading right now, but she thinks that I'm like mocking her, and I'm like, no, I'm just really happy that you're reading a book. I could, maybe you'll read one day that I've read and we can talk about it, you know? So
there you go. All right. Very last thing, are the donation page for Project Light Home still up?
It should be. I talked to CrowdRise and I said, hey, so when does this close? And they're,
hold on, you there?
That's my pinned tweet.
Hey, so sorry, you cut out. Go back. You were saying CrowdRise. You asked them when it closes.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. So I asked them when it closes, and they said, well, it doesn't close. It doesn't have to. And I said, oh, okay, great. So it's my pinned tweet on my profile. If you go, if you search at the real Herdlicka, HRDLICKA, you'll see a pinned tweet for a link to Project Light Home. Also, you can just maybe search Project Light Home. Maybe there's enough links in there. Yeah, it was a great fundraiser. We hit our goal to, and the work's going to start. We're putting insulation and LED light bulbs into underprivileged homes in Orange Mound, Binghamton, and the work's going to start, I believe, in March. Benefits Service Over Self, which is a local Memphis organization that I've been involved with in the past, that does great work in a lot of the lesser privileged. I mean, they'll go into some of these homes and there literally won't even be, there'll be newspaper up in the attic. So putting in insulation will just put money back in these people's pockets, basically.
Awesome. I just wanted
to give you. If you feel up to joining in the challenge, go to my pinned tweet or search Project Light Home or donate to Services Over Self directly. I know they would appreciate donations directly. It's a great organization.
Yeah, and that was definitely cool to see. That was during one of those moments where you're back and forth on whether Twitter is an absolute monster or has some redeeming qualities, and that was definitely a cool thing for that couple weeks to see people get behind. So go hit that if you'd like to check it out. Like Matt said, it's his pinned tweet, and I think that will about do it. Thanks for coming on, Matt.
Hey, good talking to you, Chase. Be looking out for me to slide into your DM so you can tell me weird Briarcrest stories.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will have another episode. We're trying. I don't really want to say, but we're kind of trying to make them a Wednesday thing. Obviously, there will be times that won't work out. But I'm hoping, if I hammer out the day, to have the first in-person interview for the show next week. So look for that, and we will talk to you next time. Thanks.